Thanks for listening to our podcast. We've got more information and additional resources at probe.org/podcast. And be sure to check out our life-changing Summer Mind Games Camp for high school and college students.
With everything being digitized, you should be concerned. Kirby Anderson examines the specter of big data. Now, on Probe.
This week we're going to be talking about big data. It may be a new concept for you, but it is profoundly changing your life. We live in the world of big data. That is a new way people are trying to describe the sea of digital facts, figures, products, books, music, video, and much more. All of this is at our fingertips through computers and smartphones, and there is a lot of data. Eric Schmidt, executive chairman of Google, estimates that humans now create in 2 days the same amount of data that it took from the dawn of civilization until 2003 to create. No wonder people are saying we live in the world of big data. You know, this remarkable change in our world has happened quickly and seamlessly. Today, we take for granted that we can create data and access data instantaneously. Pick up the book, The Human Face of Big Data, and look at the pictures and stories that describe the powerful impact this tsunami of data is having on our lives and our world. Look at how this vast amount of data is being used by individuals, universities, and companies to answer questions, pull together information, and persuade us to purchase various goods and services. One article in USA Today explains how big data will transform our life and lifestyles. Retailers can target you with online purchasing appeals because of the data they already collect from you when they are online. They can suggest books, videos, and various products you would be interested in based upon previous searches or purchases. If you have a smartphone, think of how you already depend on it in ways that would have been unimaginable a decade ago. It can help answer a question someone poses. It can direct you to a place to eat. If you need gas for your car, it can tell you where the closest gas station is located. Big data also provides power through instant access to information. Juan Enriquez, author of As the Future Catches You, writes that today a street stall in Mumbai can access more information, maps, statistics, and academic papers, price trends, future markets, and data than a U.S. president could just a few decades ago. Welcome to the world of big data. We have more information at our fingertips than any generation in history. As you will see this week, Christians need to be thinking about this change in our world. We as individuals and as a society must consider how to use all of this accumulated information wisely.
This has been Probe with your host, Kirby Anderson. As you go about living day by day, are you leaving behind a huge digital trail? Get Kirby's free transcript called Big Data and find out for yourself. Go to probe.org/radio. That's probe.org/radio. And join us next time as we help you to think and live biblically here on Probe.
You know, nearly a century ago, a dystopian novel imagined a world where every building was made of glass so that various authorities could monitor what citizens were doing every minute of the day. Dan Gardner suggests that the world of big data already makes that possible. The term big data describes the continuous accumulation and analysis of information. There is a reason people are calling it big data. Humans now create in 2 days the same amount of data that it took from the dawn of civilization until 2003 to create. Some predict that we will now be creating that same amount every few hours. Dan Gardner says that we are awash in an ocean of information. Every time someone clicks on something on Amazon, it's recorded and another drop is added to the ocean. Every time a customs officer checks a passport, every time someone posts to Facebook, every time someone does a Google search, the ocean swells. Anyone who has access to that data can begin to use powerful computer algorithms to sift through texts, purchases, posts, photos, and videos to extract more data and trends. Gardner says that it will be able to extract meaning and sort through masses of numbers and find the hidden pattern, the unexpected correlation, the surprising connection. This ability is growing at astonishing speed. We actually welcome some aspects of big data. When I buy a book online from Amazon, it recommends other books I might want to know about and purchase. When I buy a book at Barnes & Noble, the register receipt instantaneously prints out a list of other books similar to the one I just purchased. This ocean of big data data is also intrusive. The government knows more about you than you might want them to know. The Internal Revenue Service is collecting more than just your taxes these days. They are collecting a massive amount of personal information on your digital activities, credit card payments, ePay transactions, eBay auctions, and Facebook posts. Why is the Internal Revenue Service using big data to invade your privacy? Well, government leaders are putting pressure on the IRS because the federal government needs more money, and it is estimated that as much as $300 billion in revenue is lost to evasion and errors each year. Collecting and analyzing this data might be one way to close the so-called tax gap. The amount of data the government and private industry collects on us each day is overwhelming. Like the fictional novel, we seem to live in a world where all the buildings are made of glass. Juan Enriquez believes that we are going to have trouble keeping up with all the data coming our way. He explains that the data explosion in his book, Reflections in a Digital Mirror. He says that most modern humans are now attempting to cram more data into their heads in a single day than most of our ancestors did during their entire lifetimes. He goes on to say that in this time it takes to read this essay, the amount of information generated by the human race will be expanded to about 20 petabytes. This is equivalent to about three times the amount of information currently in the Library of Congress. We're trying to keep up. He estimates that we try to cram in, read, and understand and remember as much as 5% more words than the year before. That essentially means that 5 years ago we were trying to cope with 100,000 words per day. Now we're trying to cope with 130,000 words per day. Who can keep up? 2 years ago, a global marketing intelligence firm estimated that we played, swam, wallowed, and drowned in 1.8 zettabytes of data. To put that in perspective, the firm used this illustration. Imagine you wanted to store this data on 32 gigabyte iPads. You would need 86 billion devices, just enough to erect a 90-foot wall 4,000 miles long. The good news is we don't have to collect, catalog, and analyze all the data. Computers with powerful algorithms can do much of that. We can benefit greatly from the tsunami of data. We can go about sampling the available data to have a collection of enormous data sets. We will know the world around us in unprecedented ways. Of course, the explosion of digital data is also unprecedented. Juan Enriquez estimated by 1986, only 6% of the world's data was digital. The World Wide Web was still 3 years away. There was no Google or any other service that we might take for granted today. Now more than 99% of the world's written words, images, music, and data are in digital form. On the one hand, we are drowning in a sea of data. On the other hand, we have access to the data because we live in a digital world. The real question we have to ask in the 21st century is what to do with all this data. We'll need discernment. Proverbs 3:21 admonishes us to preserve sound judgment and discernment. Proverbs 15:14 reminds us that a discerning heart seeks knowledge, and Paul prayed that believers would be able to discern what is best. We'll need discernment in this age of big data. You know, this week we've been talking about the impact of what many are calling big data. We live in a world filled with digital facts, figures, books, music, and video. Most of it is at our fingertips, and that's a good thing. But there's also a concern about what could be called dark data. Mark Goodman has written about dark data and is concerned. He has worked on security issues in more than 70 countries and sees the possibility for criminals in our digital world. He reminds us that criminals and terrorists have found ways to use these new devices and innovations. Sadly, we often underestimate their creativity and can easily be a step behind those who intend us harm. Sometimes they have better access to information than law enforcement and Homeland Security. Drug runners in Mexico, for example, not only have the latest smartphones, but have actually been building their own encrypted radio networks in their country. Drug cartels in Colombia are using their vast wealth from drugs to fund research and development programs on everything from robotics to supply chain management. During the terrorist attack in Mumbai 5 years ago, the terrorists were armed not only with the standard artillery and explosives, but also with satellite phones, BlackBerries, night vision goggles, and satellite imagery. If that is what the terrorists had access to years ago, it is reasonable to assume that the next terrorist attack will come from terrorists using even more sophisticated technology. One of the greatest innovations for the terrorist is their open source intelligence center, which they developed across the border in Pakistan. They were able to monitor the internet and social media to determine the progress of their terrorist attacks. They had real-time open source feedback loops that actually gave the terrorists situational awareness and tactical advantages. One final concern about dark data is the ability to affect many more people with a crime or a terrorist attack. Access to all this data gives the bad guys an advantage unavailable to criminals in the past. Jesse James could rob a train. Bonnie and Clyde could rob a bank. A few dozen or a few hundreds would feel the impact. Today, hackers can steal information from millions of people. Cybercrimes can ruin the lives of many people, and cybercriminals may even be harder to catch. These new technological advances and the incredible amount of data will no doubt make our world a better place, but we should also realize that criminals and terrorists will also be there to exploit it. We need to train those in law enforcement and counterterrorism in the latest technology so that they can keep us safe. The program begins with these words. You are being watched. The government has a secret system, a machine that spies on you every hour of every day. I know because I built it. I designed the machine to detect acts of terror, but it sees everything. The program I'm talking about is the CBS series Person of Interest. The creator of the program, Jonathan Nolan, hit a cultural nerve about our increasing lack of privacy. In her article about the program, Susan Carlin reminds us that the storyline is fiction, but based upon real-life source material that Jonathan Nolan cited in his interview with her. He got some of his ideas from books like The Watchers, The Rise of American Surveillance State, and from the government's defunct Total Information Awareness Office. This isn't the first time Jonathan Nolan has raised the question of surveillance in his scripts he has written. When he co-wrote the script for the movie The Dark Knight, he inserted a scene where Batman turns all of the Gotham City cell phones into tracking devices so he can find the location of the Joker. According to Susan Carlin, Nolan got a taste of encroaching surveillance while growing up in northern London. Scotland Yard began putting cameras up everywhere, he recalls, at a time long before local phone hacking scandals erupted. There were cameras out on all the streets, and English police employed cameras. When I moved to the States at 12, there weren't any cameras. Now you're seeing some cities catching up. In Manhattan, they counted 5,000 in 2005. In 2010, the number was uncountable. When you add all the cell phone cameras in the population to these other cameras, you can easily see that we have lost our privacy. The popularity of the TV program is no doubt due to many factors in addition to concerns about privacy and surveillance. Whatever the reasons, it has struck a nerve and caused us to once again think about Big Brother. You know, this week also reminds us that we must live our lives above reproach. Philippians 2 says, "Do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you may prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent, children of God above reproach in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights in the world." In 1 Timothy 3, it says that an elder must be above reproach, which is an attribute that should describe all of us. Live a life of integrity, and you won't have to be concerned about what may be made public in an age when we are losing our privacy.